The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
The Joanne O'Riordan Podcast. A Big Red Bench production for Cork's Red FM.
Hi, welcome back to the Joanne O'Riordan Podcast with me, Joanne O'Riordan. This week, we've got part two of our episode with Emer Considine, who continues to tell us about training with the Irish Women's National Team, all the skills that she's acquired, and what it's like to teach in a girls' school, especially now when sport is becoming a huge part for women in sport and for training young girls underage. Tune in and enjoy. It was like a weird kind of World Cup, like, you know, for like a couple of ways. Like, you know, we had the like incredible high of hosting it, and then kind of all the like the stuff kind of was like starting to kind of creep out. You know, like about some of the like the conditions, like as a player, and obviously you're still playing, like did you find that incredibly tough? Like, because obviously it was your first year, so you were probably looking around being like, what's going on? You know, like they kind of tend to keep the newer player kind of in the, not in the shadows, but like, you know, not like push them out to the press, you know what I mean? So were you like a bit like kind of not baffled, but were you a bit like, what were your feelings kind of throughout that kind of World Cup time? Like, were you, was it obviously it was an enjoyable experience because it was your first time, but like did it make you hungry for more? And were you more like, okay, this is, you know, this isn't kind of how I expected it to go more than anything?
I think it's a strange one because that January I actually had applied for a career break from teaching, and I, ever before, you know, I planned on playing rugby for Ireland. I applied for a career break, and Dean and I were going to Australia that September. So like I also knew going into the World Cup that I was going to leave Irish rugby for the next year or so. Like, I didn't know how long I was going to be going on career break for it, but yeah. So it was bizarre in a lot of ways because I knew I was leaving, but also it was my first experience of a World Cup. It happened to be a home World Cup, so it was like two amazing experiences. So I think in a way I had like rose tinted glasses personally, because I was like, oh, this is amazing, I'm playing for Ireland, it's a home World Cup, my family, friends get to be here. So there was kind of mixed emotions for me. And I also think I was a bit naive to what, you know, I hadn't been in a World Cup before. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what the other girls were expecting. They'd obviously had the experience of their last World Cup or their two World Cups before that. And, you know, maybe things were different then and they knew the differences, but I didn't know any different. So I suppose, obviously, the results didn't go our way and the performances didn't go our way. And there was a lot of stuff in the background that came out in the media after that. But a lot of that, to be honest, went unknown to me. Like, I was oblivious to a lot of it because I was so young. I wasn't, not that I was young, I was young to the politics and I was young to all the that went on.
Yeah.
I suppose my experience was naive, but I enjoyed it. I really, really did. I got to play with some amazing players, players that are household names in Irish women's rugby, and to be able to play with players like that and learn from them, even though it was just 1 year, was a great experience. And then I jetted off about a week later to Australia. So I was still on this high of like playing in a World Cup, and then I got to go to Australia and be gone for the year. And I came back then the following year and I played Interpros, and then was straight into that November squad under Griggsy. I had never worked with Griggsy. He came in that following year, and there was a lot of changes to the squad. A lot of girls retired. A lot of girls took a step back from rugby. So when I came into that squad the following year, it was completely different. It was like a complete revamp of the squad. A lot of girls I didn't know. I didn't know how Griggsy was. You know, you had to prove yourself all over again to both your players and the coaches. And the year off, I suppose, was, I played a bit of rugby, played a bit of AFL, just enjoyed sport for a while because there was a time in my life where sport just became, you know, the be all and end all, and we had to actually get away to enjoy sport. But coming back then, I think I was hungrier. I was excited to be back. It was a new change. I was automatically like one of the older players. I was one of the most experienced players, even though I had probably five caps under my belt. But having played in that World Cup and having a lot of those players gone, you're automatically like, God, I'm one of the most experienced players here, even though I'm not. So we were a very inexperienced squad. And I suppose it's taken a while, you know, to get where we want to be with the squad. But this Six Nations was really positive. You know, the squad is really gelling together with our, in everything, and on the pitch, off the pitch, with our plays, how we're playing, our defensive structure. You know, it's all starting to come together. And it's kind of been a mad few years in that, like, I never planned to be where I am, and it's kind of just worked out. But, you know, it's taken a lot of hard work. People always say, you know, oh, it's worked out, people just approach you. Like, people approach me because I trained hard to be a good footballer and people noticed that. Mm-hmm. And then rugby wasn't easy. Like, it was very frustrating. There was a lot of days where there was tears and angry tears because you have high standards of yourself, but then you're not good enough. You're not there as quickly as you want to be there. And people don't see that hard work. So yes, I can say that it's all fallen into place for me, but there's a lot of behind the work scenes that people don't see. And not just the physical side of things, the game understanding and the work you do behind the scenes to understand the game better and watch fullbacks and watch wingers and how they play and to be more like them. And it has worked out, but it's not without hard work. And I think it's similar with Ailish. You know, yeah, it's worked out that she got scouted and went to Australia and is living this amazing life, but you know, we slogged it through those winter days of training and we did our off season, and this whole off season I don't think there's a day that we've missed a session that's supposed to be done. And I think they're the things that people don't see behind the scenes with athletes.
Yeah, like I was going to even say, like the physical side, I'm not saying you can semi get over because you can actually like see yourself progressing like physically, but like the mental side of learning like a whole new game for like yourself and Ailish, like constant supports for each other like throughout the whole thing. Like, I mean, because you were kind of similarly going through it, like, you know, I mean, she was going over to AFLW, kind of new sport. You were had just started your rugby career, kind of new sport, but like to learn a whole new game. Were you just like, I think what I'm trying to ask is like the mental side of the whole thing. Like, did you help each other through it? As you were saying, those tough times and those tears and those breakdowns, like, was it nice to be able to turn to your sister and be like, well, how did you manage this?
Yeah, like it was similar. I was lucky, I suppose, that I went through it first, so I was able to give a little bit of advice to Ailish. The easy side is the fitness, like we said. And I remember the first week or so, her coach asking, you know, how did you find that? Like, I think they were after doing a really tough running session, and she's like, I don't mind the running because it doesn't involve me thinking. Whereas the hard part is the understanding of the game and the tactics and where to be and the positioning. And it's the same in rugby. That was the hardest thing. But so the piece of advice I gave her was that, like, look, it doesn't happen overnight. It really doesn't. And not to be hard on yourself. I think as coming from where we were, you know, dependent on as athletes, dependent on as teammates, in whatever position or whatever team we were on, we were, you know, one of the main players, and that comes like with an added responsibility, and you automatically bring that over to your other sports and think, you know, I need to play well, I need to be the best here, and it's not going to happen. So that shift in mindset is hard because you come from a place where you're really good at something really easily to a sport where you're at the bottom of the line and you don't know it, and you kind of doubt yourself a lot and you question yourself a lot, and you're getting feedback quite a bit on how to become a better player, and you really know nothing at the start. So I think the piece of advice that I gave her was just, you know, stay with it and stay patient with it, and it's not going to happen overnight, but it will happen eventually if you just keep working at it. And I think, like I said, that's what people don't see. They don't see the work behind the scenes and how the patience or lack of patience that's involved sometimes with getting to where you actually want to be.
Yeah, like, yeah. And as you were saying, like, when you come from being like one of the top, like, I suppose, All Ireland contenders, and all of a sudden you're just tipping away, hoping for the best, hoping to even make a squad, like, it definitely has a mad kind of impact on yourself. Like, in general, like, what do you like see, like, for, so obviously now you're preparing for the other kind of championships with Ireland, like, how do you see any of those going? Like, are you optimistic? Like, are you excited? Or like, what are the aims for the team now? And even as you as a player?
I suppose just I think this Six Nations also made me realize that, like, this year and the Six Nations made me realize that nothing is given. And like, I tore my calf in the first game against Scotland. So I missed that game. And I don't know, you just never expect yourself to get injured. You never expect yourself to, you obviously are delighted every time you get that jersey, but you hope you're always going to get that jersey. But when I suppose, be it selection or be it injury, it's very disappointing to not get that Irish jersey, and I suppose not to take that for granted again. And you know, when I put on that jersey against England back in March, I never thought it was gonna be the last time I put on an Irish jersey until November, or we didn't know when was, you know, you never know the last time you're gonna put on your jersey. Yes. So I think it'll be extra special whoever does get those 23 match day jerseys. So I suppose the first thing is to make that squad. That's the first thing, and to be fit and healthy and to be healthy enough to be able to be there. I suppose with these days, COVID, you never know, like, who's going to be a close contact or who's going to be sick. You know, it's so easily picked up. And, you know, I suppose it's taking it every day at a time. So I suppose the first thing personally is to get selected and to be able to be selected. The second thing is obviously we're playing Italy and France, finishing out this year's Six Nations. So, you know, if we can keep that momentum that we had, you know, we played against England, and even though the result didn't go our way, we were very proud of how our defensive efforts were. You know, they only scored, I think, 5 points in the second half. So to keep England to 5 points in 40 minutes is an achievement in itself. At the end of the day, they are pro. So I suppose we have our, you know, we're proud of that. We know what we need to work on. But, you know, we have that momentum. If we can keep that momentum going into that Italy game, we'll be happy with that. So I suppose our eyes are set on that. Hopefully in, I think it's less than 23 days time. I think it's like three weeks away, which is mental to think that we're really playing a game in 3 weeks time, but really, really exciting. And then obviously we have France.
Go on.
Sorry. Then we have the French game the week after that, and then World Cup qualifiers, and then hopefully straight into the Six Nations. So like once it does start, I think it'll be a long season of rugby and a very exciting season of rugby.
Yeah, like I was going to say, you're probably just incredibly grateful. Obviously, you want to compete, don't get me wrong, but you're probably just incredibly grateful to actually have like a rugby season. And like, as we were saying earlier, like to be back, as you were saying, to be back with your friends and your teammates is an achievement and a bonus in itself. Like you're no longer doing Zoom sessions with your coach.
Yeah, that's it. Like, you know, there's so many Zoom workouts you can do and Zoom challenges. But yeah, like, we have a few big weekends of training ahead of us now, ahead of the Italy and French games. And yeah, being back together is, I suppose, the most important thing. You know, we have the girls coming over from England as well. So the whole squad is back together. So that works out really well. And some really, obviously, we have some injuries in the squad. So a lot of girls have been ruled out, unfortunately. And that's disappointing for them and for us as well. But, you know, we have girls coming back in, like Claire Malloy. You know, like she's... Mm-hmm. I think she is the most decorated Irish rugby player that we have, like, at the moment. You know, she's part of the historical winning team and has more caps than half we've put together, you know. So she, like, bringing someone like that into a squad is just such a boost as well, especially having the disappointment of losing some of the girls like Aoife Mack and Claire Mack and Tricky to injury. So, you know, it's disappointing that way, but, you know, we're gaining Malloy, which is a great boost to the squad. And, you know, we've Baven back as well after she took the break off after not doing her leaving cert. She was supposed to do it with leaving cert, but then obviously not doing the leaving cert. So, you know, we've a lot of the squad back in, and there's so much competition for places. That's like good and scary at the same time, but like, it's good. Yeah, it's just positive. I like to be back playing.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, and it's good, like, for the future of kind of Irish, like, women's rugby, like, to have a level of competitiveness in the squad. And as you were saying, kind of the young bucks kind of coming through, like, it's nice to be able to kind of, I suppose, you're all bouncing off each other in a good way.
Yeah, and I think as games come closer, like, it gets a bit more feisty and fiery in training that, like, yeah, we're all friends with each other. Like, we do obviously really like each other, but then when it comes to like the 15 jerseys, like, you want that jersey. So there does become a little bit of bite in training, and you can see it, you know, there's the closer it gets to matches and the closer it gets to selection. Yeah, they're your friends at the end of the day, but you want to play, like, you want to get that jersey, and there's only 15 of them. So you know, you want it, you're out there and you're doing everything that you can in training and everything that you can Monday to Friday to ensure that you are on that field when you're playing Italy or when you're playing France.
And what are your hopes, like, as a player? Like, as you were saying, like, you've got, I think, is it 15 caps, like, for Ireland? So obviously you want more caps, but, like, what's your hope in terms of, like, what you want kind of personally? You know, obviously, like, a dream world, you probably want, like, Grand Slams and stuff like that. But, like, what are your personal, like, what would you personally love to achieve now by maybe the end of next year? Like, let's say that the rugby career keeps going, like, what would you kind of like to be able to take off your bucket list at the end?
Yeah, well, I suppose short term it's World Cup qualifiers. You know, we want to qualify for that World Cup, and then this time next year, the World Cup will be still on, actually. It's October, yeah. It would still be on in New Zealand. Yeah. So if we can, so short-term goals, wins in the Six Nations, qualify for that World Cup, and, you know, have a good Six Nations next year ahead of that World Cup with a good summer of training before we head over to New Zealand. You know, that's, it's been the goal since the last World Cup. You know, we knew we didn't qualify based on our rankings in that last World Cup. So I suppose, yeah, the qualification for that World Cup is what our eyes, I know short-term Six Nations is important, and it is important in relation to helping us for that qualifying tournament. You know, we need good performances in the Six Nations to, so that we're ready and so that we're prepped for this, for the World Cup qualifiers, with the end goal of getting on that plane to New Zealand, which is very exciting. Like, everyone on the squad, you know, that's what we're focused on. We don't play just to play. We play just to be, we play to be competitive. We play to win games and to be at big moments like a World Cup. And I think every one of the squad, all 40 something of us, you know, that's what our eyes are set on. With the Six Nations now and the Six Nations next year, helping us and setting us up for preparation for those.
Yeah, and like for future generations, like as you were saying, like for people who want to be the next like Emer and Eilish, like Considine, like what advice would you have for them kind of coming up through the ranks? Like if they're either a Gaelic footballer or a Camogie player, athletics, or even a wannabe rugby player, like what would be your thing to tell them?
Yeah, like there's so much there, like, because I know I said I didn't want to be a rugby player, but I was still ridiculously competitive in everything that I did, and I wanted to be the best at what I did, whether it was a test in school, like I wanted to get the highest result, whether it was anything. Like, I just feel like I'm ridiculously competitive, and I just had high standards for myself, and those high standards crossed over, whether it's football, rugby, basketball, volleyball, whatever sport that I played, you know, those high standards carried on even into my work life. You know, I hate being underprepared for anything, so I suppose just have high standards of yourself. And, you know, I think that's a good one to have, because it doesn't just mean sport, and it doesn't just mean have a high standard like score 5 tries. It's, you know, if I do my weight session properly today, I'll feel better if knowing that I've done my weight session properly. If I eat well, you know, your high standards aren't just, like I said, scoring the tries. It's just every aspect of your life. And it can get a bit intense sometimes. But I suppose you have to have those standards there to drive yourself too. And with those high standards, other opportunities will come out of that. You know, if you work hard, it is obviously luck that I am and Eilish is where we are. But, you know, it came from constantly driving our standards on and off the field in all aspects of our life. And if you do everything to your best and to your best ability, you know, it'll get you places. And I think that's, you know, if it's a young girl who wants to play rugby for Ireland, well, your high standards are prepare yourself well, go training, listen to your coaches, because so that you are the best that you can be. Whether it's if you want to be like a musician in like the orchestra, well, then practice, you know, get your standards up to the standard that you want it to be. And I think it's just a piece of advice that I'd, whether you're a sports person or anything, if you have your standards high and if you're prepared and just do your best, that's really all that's enough, really.
Yeah, I mean, like you teach in all girls school, like, don't you? So
yes,
like, do you find it like incredibly frustrating then when you like see them like obviously not trying their best, but also like just maybe due to like whatever like standards like exist outside of the school, like that they're kind of boxed in? Like, are you always like, you're probably always encouraging them to strive to be whatever it is they want to be? Like, you've probably seen, you know, like an Instagram effect, or, you know, like so many different things that are putting pressure on so many young girls. Like, you know, how, like, as a teacher, like, do you see that constantly?
Yeah, you do. Like, I suppose social media is just a different conversation altogether. It's such a false, you know, it's a false image of what life should be. And I think the more you can tell them that, the better. If they understand that they'll learn so much about that. But yeah, I suppose what I'd say to them is just, if you just do your best, like, no one is going to, like, whether your best is 60% or whether your best is getting A's across the board, you know, it's your best. And no one can be angry with that if you do your best. And like, not everyone is going, and I always say that in PE especially, because I probably say this 5 times a week. I was like, you know, I'm not expecting you to be Olympic athletes. I'm expecting you to do your best. And your best could be running and catching the ball 5 times in a game, or your best could be scoring 5 baskets in a basketball game. You know, it's, your best is different. And I think you need to stop comparing yourself to everyone else. And I do honestly say that probably 5 times a week in PE, because I'm like, look, I'm not expecting you to be the best athlete out here. I'm just expecting you to have put in a bit of effort and do your best. And it's applicable in a lot of cases, not just in my PE class in school. But yeah, because you can't compare yourself to everyone and in every situation, because your situation is different, your background is different, your training regime is different. So stop comparing yourself to everyone else and just compare yourself to you and try and be a better version of yourself and do your best. And that should be enough.
And even, like, as you were saying, like, about being a PE teacher, like, have you found that attitudes have changed even towards, like, girls in PE? Like, I remember, like, PE was, like, the worst class, like, for us. I didn't mind it. Like, I quite enjoyed it. But, like, I found, like, that a lot of the girls weren't that interested. Like, do you get incredibly frustrated when you see that? And it's, as you were saying, it's not that you want them to be an Olympic athlete. It's just the physical and mental benefits you get from being active.
Yeah, like, I honestly think that I thankfully haven't had too much of that. Like, obviously, there's the odd one or two who avoid PE, like the plague. But I think they're coming around to the one good thing about social media is that there is a huge influence on fitness at the moment. And even if they are, mm-hmm. even if every person under the sun is a PT at the moment, well, at least they're, you know, they're physically active, which is great. And if they're following all these people who are into their fitness, well, they'll get influenced by them subconsciously. And that's not a bad thing, to be physically active. So I think they are, even though I think the end message is because they want to look better, but you'll feel better if you do exercise as well. So I think it goes hand in hand. So I honestly don't have that many negative encounters with them in relation to physical activity, thankfully. You know, there is always the odd one or two who just don't want to do PE. But I think the majority of them see the physical and mental benefits of physical activity. And I think the lockdown as well has taught us that, like, what was one thing that kept us sane throughout this was actually getting out and going for a walk, or getting out and doing a bit of exercise is what really, you know, regardless of your fitness levels or your fitness abilities, getting out for a bit of exercise helped clear the head. And I think they realized that, which really is good. So I don't have that fight in PE. Also, these days it's really, really ideal, because with COVID they come to school in their PE uniform, so they get to wear their tracksuit for a full day. So, like, that has really, really benefited the PE department, especially in my school. Anyway, I can't speak for anyone else in their school, but the uptake in PE and the participation rate in PE at the moment is amazing, because they get to wear their own tracksuits. So I am happy so far with this, but I think it's the benefits of physical activity outweigh the negative bits, and I think they're all starting to see and understand the importance of it, especially in the current climate.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, it's been really, really good to talk to you and hear everything about your career. I've definitely been a big fan since you started playing kind of rugby sevens and even through GA. So no, thanks very much for taking the time to come on the podcast. We really appreciate it, and best of luck with everything that you do, and fingers crossed I get to visit your school, because I remember we tried that a few months back, so fingers crossed I actually get to pop up and say hi at some stage.
Exactly, hopefully we're allowed to have visitors in sometime soon and I can get you in. But thank you so much for having me on. It was lovely to talk to you.
That was the last of our episodes with Emer Considine, but don't worry, we still have more podcasts to come from. Tune in next week, where I interview former hurdler and current Irish Sport Ireland psychologist Jessie Barr, where she talks to us about her career as a hurdler growing up, her kind of famous brother that you may or may not know, and what it was like to become a sports psychologist. Don't forget to follow us on all social media platforms, including Twitter, @BigRedBench and @JoannaR_OX. Tune in next week, and cheerio.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.